Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Bhagavatam 19. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur introduces the next five verses, 20 to 24, as follows. After the whole person has been criticized, now the parts of his body are criticized in five verses. One who has not listened to the messages about the prowess and marvelous acts of the personality of Godhead, and has not sung or chanted loudly the worthy songs about the Lord, is to be considered to possess ear holes like the holes of snakes and a tongue like the tongue of a frog. Verse 20, Srila Prabhupada comments. Service to the Lord is completely purified use of the senses, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. In the impure state of a living being, the various senses are fully engaged in mundane affairs. If the ear is not engaged in the service of the Lord by hearing about Him from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, certainly the holes of the ear will be filled with some rubbish. Therefore, the messages of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam should be preached all over the world very loudly. That is the duty of a pure devotee who has actually heard about them from the perfect sources. Many want to speak something to others, but because they are not trained to speak on the subject matter of Vedic wisdom, they are all speaking nonsense, and people are receiving them with no sense. There are hundreds and thousands of sources for distributing mundane news in the world, and people of the world are also receiving it. Similarly, the people of the world should be taught to hear the transcendental topics of the Lord, and the devotee of the Lord must speak loudly so that they can hear. The frogs loudly croak, with the result that they invite the snakes to eat them. The human tongue is especially given for chanting the Vedic hymns, and not for croaking like frogs. The word asati, used in this verse, is also significant. Asati means a woman who has become a prostitute. A prostitute has no reputation for good womanly qualities. Similarly, the tongue, which is given to the human being for chanting the Vedic hymns, will be considered a prostitute when engaged in chanting some mundane nonsense. Right, so here now he's going through and showing what there's the total. So now is that one's hearing and chanting, if that's not connected to the Lord, then it's a waste of time. Right? So that's the basic thing. Because the frogs, they chant, you know, very loudly.
Yes.
Right? You know, great choruses. And then it just invites snakes. Right? And then the ear, that if it's not hearing something of value, then it's, you know, no better than ear holes like snakes. Because snakes actually don't have ear holes, right? So there's nothing to hear, right? So it's because of the vibration of the croaking of the frog that they are able, it's not that they hear it, they can feel it. Right, so it's basically the whole process is useless. Shaunaka Rishi continues his condemnation of materialists. The upper portion of the body, though crowned with a silk turban, is only a heavy burden if not bowed down before the personality of Godhead, who can award him mukti, freedom. And the hands, though decorated with glittering bangles, are like those of a dead man if not engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead, Hari. Verse 21, Srila Prabhupada explains, a drowning man with a heavy weight on his head is sure to go down more swiftly than those who have no heavy weight. A foolish, puffed up man defies the science of God and says that God has no meaning for him. But when he is in the grip of God's law and is caught by some disease like cerebral thrombosis, that godless man sinks into an ocean of nescience by the weight of his material acquisition. Advancement of material science without God consciousness is a heavy load on the head of human society, and so one must take heed of this great warning. So, at the point that that comes across is that if it's not connected to the Lord, it's useless. And the acharyas are going to great trouble to point out every little detail. So it's not that, you know, some major thing. No, even minor things. Anything not connected. That's why it's not important to have things in one's life that are not connected. And then, unfortunately, they are valued. Right? We value them. So we must always see that whatever we're dealing with is always in connection with Krishna. If it's not in connection with Krishna, then there'll always be an anxiety. There'll always be a problem. Yes.
I'm so useless, so I have to do this in order to purify my contaminated state. Is that connected?
But what do you mean by... I have to purify. Why purify? And what makes one contaminated? You understand? These are the questions. Is one saying, I'm so contaminated I have to do this to purify? Yes, but what makes contamination and... what's the point of purification? What actually purifies? Right? Because the elephant, they love water. They love baths.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
They get right into it. They will be totally underwater. And now and again, they'll stick their trunk out, you know, breathe, and then put their trunk back in the water. So they're perfectly happy taking a bath. But as soon as they finish, then they literally throw dust on themselves. You know, this isn't, that's the, you know, it's a poetic, occasionally. No, it's that they have to do it. You know? So, the whole point is what creates purity, what creates contamination, what will remove the contamination? Because then all this is that, and why be pure? What's the point? So in all this, the point is it can be connected, but you still need to connect it. Otherwise, why talk about I have to purify myself? What's the problem? Right, the soul is already actually transcendental, so what's to purify? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So you're saying a better question would be to try to find where am I contaminated? What are the elements? What are the...
No, but even there is that... What does that mean, contaminated? Contaminated means not thinking of Krishna.
My consciousness is disturbed.
Yes, but the disturbed... How is it disturbed? What causes disturbance? You understand? It's just, we just take it for granted that last little bit of connection to Krishna is there. It's like, you know, I went out, I worked hard, I got the money. Right? Then I found the time and the tight schedule. I got in the car, I got on the subway, and I rode to the other end of town. Right? And there was this, you know, sale on. I went into the shop, I looked around, it was a whole trip. I finally found what I want. Unfortunately, someone else also wanted it. There was a whole big fight about it. Went to the counter, there's this mile-long line. I sat there through the whole thing, got the thing, finally got the, bought the computer, you know, got back in the thing, went back in the train, but then it was busy, you know, it was rush hour, so it was a whole trip and this and that, and the guy next to me and his dog and the other side, the kid was crying, and like that, and, you know, the old man across me was slobbering. I mean, it was really bad. Then I got home, and then there was a whole thing going on at home, and this and that, and I finally get to my room, and I put my computer down on the table there, you know, and so then that's it, you know, okay, I did it, okay, like that, but it's not working. Why isn't it working? All this trouble and it's not working, you know, and his friend says, well, you have to plug it in, but that's so small, I've done all this, why are you making this point about this plugging in? So there's this difficulty is that we just take it for granted it's automatically plugged in. But anything you can take for granted? No. That's the whole thing, is that when you're dealing on this platform, since it's a relationship with Krishna, it's not just a, you know, some technique. Therefore, relationship is when you actually connect it. You know? Like that. You know, you're there, you're doing all the different things, you're doing your duties, you did this and that and all that, but unless you mention the particular feelings of affection, it's not complete. Right? So that's the whole thing. We just take it for granted. Of course that's there. But the point is until you say it, it's not of course. Because otherwise, we see the acharyas, they never just say it without saying the connection to Krishna. They always say it. In fact, they'll start with the Lord. You know, they'll always start, by the Lord's grace, you're so wonderful, you're so that, you're, I mean, we're talking purity here, you're beyond the modes, you're not affected, you're unattached, but myself being an infinitesimal, you know, jiva, I am overwhelmed by these modes, and now I have forgotten you, please, when will I be able to remember? They always start like that. They don't start off with just getting purified or just being good or right. Right? Because we always come back to being purified and being moral. You know, or if it's not moral, being successful or being truthful or right. So it's always pranamoy. Right? You know, and then you throw in a little bit of being relieved from problems. But we're still, even though we're talking moksha, we're talking it in connection with artha. Right? We're not actually talking moksha, because that's the soul. You know, we're talking about being liberated from the particular inconvenience of not having economic development.
That's what we love.
Yes. Right? Yes. Because the acharyas, they're mentioning these things when they're in a good situation. We generally only bring it up when there's a bad situation. Which is fine. At least we brought it up. That is the definition of sura. Sura means one who remembers the Lord when something goes wrong. So that's good. It's not a problem. But that's that position. But we see that the great devotees, they're always remembering the Lord even when things are nice. Right? Because if you remember when it's nice, means then it's going good. So you're good, you're happy. You're happy, you want to share that. Right? So it's not considered the pinnacle of personalism when we only want to share our troubles. And when everything's going great, then we revel in it ourselves. You know? Generally, it's a matter of, you know, you would try to ideally do it the other way, but at least share both. Is that? Yeah. So that's the...
If that's the nature of the relationship we want, that we're solving problems, then the Lord can keep us wrapped up in that level of relationship.
Point is yes, a relationship, because you don't require, relationship doesn't require that things are bad. But if the only time you remember Krishna is when it's bad, then they'll always be bad. You know? Like that. So, you know, if you're always remembering Krishna, then things can be good also. Yeah, so then all these things that we develop, that we value, if they're not connected to Krishna, they simply become a great weight, and they just weigh one down. Right? So the example of this, the silk turban, we'll think, well, I'm not wearing a silk turban. But the point is how? Why would somebody be wearing a silk turban?
Right?
Big head. Okay, yeah, that could work. But you could also cover it with, you know, some other than silk, right? So the idea is that the silk turban, one, is means that there's, why would they be wearing silk, right? There would have to be some wealth, and even if they have wealth, that they'd wear a turban with that silk, that means there must be some sophistication. right? So that means all this thing of their wealth, their sophistication, their social position, their pride, because if you're wearing a silk turban, you have to be able to pull it off also, right? You know, like that. Because so they're able to do all that. So that simply becomes a burden. Right? It simply becomes a burden. And so that just weighs the living entity down. So when he's caught within the whirlpool of the material energy, he goes down quicker because he has more to weigh him down. Right. Yes?
About connection or value, it's more important to connect, to try to connect everything to Krishna before to change our value?
Connect to... Oh, well, it's... You change your value by connecting it to Krishna. Right? It means if simply you just change the value and I mean just remember Krishna and these insignificant things go away, then that's fine. That's best. That's very direct. But if we find they don't, you connect it to Krishna, then it becomes purified. Then we find, right? Because it's connection to Krishna. Everything is Krishna, but unless we see it that way, you don't get that benefit. Right, because Krishna is a person. Like that. So it's a matter of you recognize. Like, you know, you're sitting there with the person, you know, and you're quiet, they're quiet. But there's nothing. But if you, you know, hello, you know, and start talking, then that personal element comes out, that exchange, that taste is there. Right? So that has to be dynamic. The eyes which do not look at the symbolic representations of the personality of Godhead, Vishnu, his forms, names, qualities, etc., are like those printed on the plumes of the peacock. And the legs which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered are considered to be like tree trunks. The person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body. And the person who has never experienced the aroma of the tulsi leaves of the lotus feet of the Lord's is also a dead body, although breathing. 22-23. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on verse 23. After criticism of various parts of the body, there's now, in verse 23, criticism of all of them together. Right? So it's a complete package. All together, then individually, then all again. Yes. The person who does not touch abhilabdhapeta, the dust of the devotee's feet, who does not smear that dust on his body, is like a living corpse. A departed soul, shava, who frightens the devotees by his presence. This means that the Lord does not accept the service from his hands. A person who is not eager to smell the fragrance of tulsi attached to the Lord's feet is also a breathing corpse. Because if there's no interest in these things, then what's the meaning of life? Right? One hasn't taken shelter of the devotees. How you'll do activities that please the Lord? The Lord won't accept them. Because there's no meaning to direct service to the Lord. Right? It doesn't have a meaning. It means direct, it means as far as relationship. Physical interaction, that's a different thing. We have to understand what direct means. Since it's about relationship, direct means in relationship. So you don't have a direct interaction with the Lord. We're always serving the devotees, because the Lord in his internal potency, that's direct. We're expanded from internal potency. Right, as tatasta. So that means our connection to Krishna is through the internal potency. Right? Like that. There is no such thing as direct relationship. And even within internal potency, there's Sarup Shakti, which is the original. Then as the Sarup Shakti expands, then you get all these different details that they've expanded from. So they are devotees of who they've expanded from. That makes sense. Like that. So it's natural. It happens like that. So especially us, you know, we're, you know, quite a ways down the line there. So we have that mood. So someone who does not take shelter of the devotees, then the Lord is not interested. And you haven't smelled the tulsi from the lotus feet of the Lord, means one's not actually interested in serving the Lord. So if one's taken up that service, right? So in other words, rendering service without shelter to devotees has no meaning. And having taken, and at the same time, as if you're not rendering real service, which means under the direction of the devotees, it's also no meaning. So basically, all the others are just, you know, bad, but you're as good as dead if you're not surrendered to devotees and rendering service to the Lord. That's the end package, right? You know. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. Maharaj Rahugana inquired from the great saint Jatabhata as to how he had attained such a liberated state as a Paramahamsa. In an answer, the great sage replied as follows, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.12. O King Rahugana, the perfectional stage of devotional service, or the Paramahamsa stage of life, cannot be attained unless one is blessed by the dust of the feet of great devotees. It is never attained by tapasya, austerity, the Vedic worshipping process, acceptance of the renounced order of life, the discharge of duties of household life, the chanting of Vedic hymns, or the performance of penances in the hot sun, within cold water, or before the blazing fire. In other words, Lord Sri Krishna is the property of his pure, unconditional devotees, and as such, only the devotees can deliver Krishna to another devotee. Krishna is never obtainable directly. Lord Chaitanya therefore designated himself as Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 1380. Or the most obedient servant of the servants of the Lord who maintains the Gopi damsels at Vrindavan. A pure devotee therefore never approaches the Lord directly, but tries to please the servant of the Lord's servants, and thus the Lord becomes pleased. Only then can the devotee relish the taste of the tulsi leaves stuck to his lotus feet. It's very important here because, see, the Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamalayor. So that is the end of the line. Then is Das Das Anadasa. Right? Is servant of the servant of the servant. There's a principle at work here. One, there's the personal relationship, but there's the principle. One has to be very, very careful, because otherwise it's popular that we don't really care so much about the guru or care about the Vaishnavas. Right? It's just, you know, that they're there. They're not necessarily that special. But the point is this is the process. If one doesn't accept the process, one will not be able to get the benefit of the process. Right? And so in this process, yes, you may accept your own guru, but what about others? Not that you have to deal with them like they're your guru. There's an etiquette, but at least the process has to be accepted. If you don't think that other people are nicely connected because their guru is not something special, only yours is, it's also going to inhibit the process working. Because this is just a general principle. It can't be played with because of modern concepts of truth. One has to be very careful about these things. Right? Because the point is, if everything's Krishna, that means then everybody but the guru? This is Mayavad. Mayavad, God is everywhere, but he can't be in the temple. Right? He's not in the form. That's illusion. But everything else is Brahman? That's very selective. Right? So such subjective opinions you have to be very, very careful about these. Right? It sounds great in the modern context, but it's very devastating to the devotional creeper. The point is where Krishna applies his potency, it works. As we pointed out, practically most all devotees have been made a devotee by a neophyte. Very rare does someone directly deal with Prabhupada and he made them a devotee, he convinced them. There are devotees like that, but most weren't. In fact, there's a good chance most devotees were made by someone who wasn't even initiated. So how does that work? How did that happen? How did one get drawn out of the material ocean that we've been part of since time immemorial by a new devotee? And then we're saying that this other person who is practicing, committed, and trying to do something can't take you back to Godhead? That's inconsistent. That's not logical. That's a very subjective opinion. And that kind of opinion, as we see, as Dharabharata makes it, is basically useless. Right? You know, and that's on a good day. You know? So it's just useless. So when they mention all these things, tapasya, Vedic worship, like that, we'll think, yes, those things don't do. But I'm doing these modern things like that. That has value. How would anything modern have value if the Vedic doesn't? Vedic's reality, Vedic's in goodness. Modern is always in passion and ignorance. How would it have substance? We have to be very careful. Right. So all these things, austerity, everybody is performing some austerity, or their duties, or discharging the duties of household life as they see it. Oh, I'm going out, I'm getting the money. Right? And that's the end of it. But it's still useless. Chanting the Vedic hymns, if chanting the Vedic hymns aren't of use, then chanting anything else is even less useful. Right? Performance of penances in the hot sun within the cold water. Yeah, going out there and, you know, in the middle of winter, going to your office in Chicago. Now that's, you know, that's austerity. You know? So all these different things, it's just, there's no use. If one hasn't taken shelter of devotees, one doesn't appreciate devotees, one's not serving the Lord, then it's not good. But as devotees, of course, one's not exactly in this condition. But one shouldn't leave it at that. One's always trying to, for Krishna's pleasure, improve the situation, right? In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord is never to be found by becoming a great scholar of the Vedic literatures, but he is very easily approachable through his pure devotee. In Vrindavan, all the pure devotees pray for the mercy of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. Srimati Radharani is a tender-hearted feminine counterpart of the Supreme Whole, resembling a perfectional stage of the worldly feminine nature. Therefore, the mercy of Radharani is available very readily to the sincere devotees. And once she recommends such a devotee to Lord Krishna, the Lord at once accepts the devotee's admittance into his association. The conclusion is, therefore, that one should be more serious about seeking the mercy of the devotee than that of the Lord directly. And by one's doing so, by the goodwill of the devotee, the natural attraction for the service of the Lord will be revived. So that's why it's more, the devotees are more important than the worship of the Lord. That's why if you're worshiping the Lord, let's say, and some Vaishnavas come, then leaving that worship of the Lord, going and taking, receiving the Vaishnavas, getting them situated, is actually the superior, decision in the process of deity worship. But if you say, no, I'm doing worship, you know, like that, that's more important. One's missed the point. Right? Because you think, I'm sitting here worshiping the Lord, but the Lord's going to be thinking of the devotees, or making arrangements for the devotees. So then, you know, he's not interested in the worship. Having criticized in verses 20 through 23 the external limbs of the materialistic person, now in verse 24, Shanaka Rishi criticizes his internal nature. Quote, certainly that heart is steel framed, which, in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes and hairs stand on end. Srila Prabhupada explains. The whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at changing the heart of the living being. In the matter of his eternal relation with the Supreme Lord as subordinate servant, which is his eternal constitutional position. So So, with the process of devotional service, the reaction of change in the heart is exhibited by gradual detachment from the sense of material enjoyment, by a false sense of lording it over the world, and an increase in detachment, the sense of material enjoyment, which comes by a false sense of lording it over, right? You enjoy something because you control it, right? If you feel I have control over it, I can enjoy it. So we have to give up the enjoying. Why do we start there rather than the controlling? Because the point is, you can control something, but if you're controlling it for a service to Krishna, there's not a problem. So the controlling's not the problem. But this sense of material enjoyment, that's where it is. So if there's no sense of material enjoyment, then one's position will always be in connection with the Lord. Right. Yes?
My question is about previous point. If one... In one worships Lord by chanting japa, and another person comes and ask him some questions, but this person will not answer because he's worships the Lord. Is it proper behavior?
Is it proper? It depends on the situation. You know what I'm saying? The point is, who is the person asking and who is the person chanting, and what is the question? You understand? That's the whole point. What's the position, the relationship? Could someone else have been asked? Yeah? Yes.
This is a more concrete example of this same.
More
concrete. I mean, so the...
You're from which place?
Ukraine.
Okay.
Sorry for my English.
No. I wasn't that. I was just wondering if we were going to have an extension of a Russian question.
So, for example, in Japa, we're praying about spiritual life of other devotees. So, okay. Is it more like certain devotees or direct devotion? Because chanting japa is...
The point is, it's hearing and remembering the Lord, right? So if devotees are included, fine, but it's not that makes it the superior japa. You understand? See, what's the problem in these two questions? Is if I say, if we go, okay, the conclusion is that if you're doing worship and you don't stop that to deal with the other person, then that's not pleasing to the Lord. Okay? So then we get the scenario where the devotee, he wants to ask a question, and he just sees somebody. They're chanting. He could have gone around and looked for someone else, but he doesn't. So he goes up to him and then asks, and because he doesn't respond, then you get upset. And so now you have a right to get upset because he didn't stop because I asked a question. But then the problem comes is, are you a Vaishnav that therefore... it's that there's an offense in the first place. You know what I'm saying? But that doesn't come into the question, right? And then in here is that, you know, chanting and thinking about the Lord, that's there, but we should be thinking about the devotee because that's higher. And then that preaching about that and starting a whole movement about this. Okay? You understand? That's why we're very careful about such questions. There's a principle to work in. Catch the principle. If you only use a detail. In other words, his question, he's thinking about a very specific time, a very specific incident. Now, I don't know if he's the one chanting or if he's the one that's asked the question. But whichever one it is, it's going to be used very strongly to point out the other person was wrong and I was right. But that's not the point. The point is it's about the Lord and what is his preference, how we fit into it, how we serve within this. You understand? So, in other words, there is an absolute position, but the absolute position is the principle. The detail has to be adjusted for time, place, and circumstance, but the principle. So what we're being careful about is when the detail is taken in an absolute way. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
So it seems that the neophyte is he's gonna commit offenses and he's gonna commit mistakes, and by this process he's gonna be involved in so many, you know, things.
Yes.
So how to get out from this?
How to get out? It means basically just one sincerely wants to improve and develop. See, the difficulty is when one is very comfortable in the neophyte position. One should always be aspiring to come to that platform of pure devotion. And that interest is going to help a lot. The other is associate with those who are more advanced, so that one starts to become purified by that association, by starting to see things how they see it in connection with the Lord. The point of purification is you see it in connection with the Lord. Otherwise, like we see the yogis, the jnanis, they become extremely purified up to the point of liberation, but there's still been no connection to the Lord. So if they're fortunate that having come to that liberated platform, then they connected to the Lord, then the distance is very short. And so then immediately they're situated on the platform above. But if they don't make that connection, they're as far away as anybody else. Because just being purified, just being liberated, is not actually any more of a material benefit than not being. It's just a different flavor. You know what I'm saying? Like that, you know. You know, which is better, you know, your back is to the sun and you're getting sunburned, or, you know, your sides to the sun and getting sunburned, or, you know, it's all bad. You know, it's just different flavors, right? You know? Like that. So that's the point being made, is that there is no position, like the man with a lot of wealth, he's still no better off as far as Krishna consciousness than the man without money. And now if he engages that money in Krishna's service, then he advances nicely. But not engaging it, what's the use? You know, or he has physical strength. If he doesn't use it for Krishna, it's still a waste. Right? Rocks are very strong. Right? It means you have a wall falling over, put a big enough rock there, it'll hold it up. Like that. You know, they're very strong. You hit it with a hammer, nothing happens. They're strong. You know, but one is in a better position than that. So that connection to Krishna is what makes it important. So the more advanced the devotees, the more they're seeing things connected to Krishna. We catch that, right? But we have to be careful. That's what I was saying, is that when we put in these absolutisms of detail, then unless they have this symptom or that symptom, then it's all useless. But somehow or another, if their position is useless, then what's ours? Right? We're in a good dynamic position to advance in Krishna consciousness, but this advanced devotee, because of this fault or that fault, is in no position to help at all. How does that work? How does that work? You know, who decides that? I mean, of course, other than us, but, you know. You understand? That's the point. So it's based on this moralistic kind of concept. It's not actually dealing with reality. So then the neophyte, simply you want it and you take advantage of the association. And then one will naturally move beyond that. But those who aren't interested in association or figure that they're fine wherever they are, then it'll be very slow. Because that's all. It's not a matter of us and our qualification. That's what we put it on. It's our qualification. I'm the one that makes devotional service happen. I'm purified, it works well. I'm not purified, it doesn't. I made the endeavor, that's why it's working like that. He didn't make the endeavor, that's why it's not. He didn't do what I did. But we're not the cause. Krishna's the cause. So you please him, it works. So that's the...
So, Maharaj, so for people who are not very submissive, I mean for new people, so how can we help them?
But what do you mean by submission?
Not very submissive. That means they are not ready to render service to, you know, devotees.
But what service don't they want to render to devotees? What does that mean?
That means like, you know, hear from devotees, or, you know, render some personal service or whatever.
And whatever they're willing to do, cultivate that. Because like you said, they're new, so they don't have so much understanding. Then in that case, you just find what are they willing to do. Like if they're willing to take prasad, then plenty of prasad. Right? And then by taking prasad, they'll get purified. Like we gave example, this one devotee was explaining. He had a friend who liked going to the temple for the Sunday program. And he never, you know, was interested. Then his friend convinced him to go once. There was some situation he just had to go because he had to do something with the car, and had, so he just went. And he was like basically a total atheist. And so then he went there, you know, didn't like, but somehow or another they went, and after seven times of going to the Sunday program, he moved into the temple as a devotee. And all he did was take prasad. He wasn't interested in anything else. So seven times taking prasad, and he became a devotee. So, you know, powerful. So you just find what they are willing to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's all. You know, so don't make it that they're not doing what I say, therefore they're not submissive. That's why I ask, yeah, whether you define submission. It's a matter of that they don't want to take part in the devotional activities. But since there's such a wide range, find one that they do like. Is that okay? Yes. Vaidhi bhakti, or regulated devotional service by the limbs of the body, namely the eyes, the ears, the nose, the hands, the legs, as already explained herein before, is now stressed herein in relation to the mind. Because right? Before they pointed out, the eyes, you know, are like the eyes on the plumage of a peacock, right? The ears are like snakes. The hands and legs, you know, just like on trunks of trees, they're doing nothing. Right? They're not getting you anywhere. It's not that the tree is getting anywhere really fast, you know, like that. You come out, you know, this morning and, you know, the tree's in its normal place. You go back in the house, you come out to get the newspaper, and then you bump into the, you know, the branch of the tree, and hey, wait a minute, you know. You find that all the trees are leaving your yard, going to the neighbor's yard because he waters them, right? You know, like that would be interesting. That would be really interesting. Yeah. Okay. So now the stress herein is in relation to the mind, which is the impetus for all activities of the limbs of the body, right? Because the mind controls. So he's getting at that these are all useless.
Yes.
So that heart is steel framed, which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes and hairs stand on end. So these things happen, but still you don't care. Right? So that's the steel framed heart. Not that it doesn't happen. It's saying when it happens that you don't care.
And if it doesn't happen? Even?
Oh, you're saying, is that worse? No, but at least you're making the attempt.
Because you don't care when it does happen. Yes. If it doesn't happen. Then
well, what it means if you don't care when it doesn't happen, then that's also a problem. Yeah, but still, if you're trying to chant nicely, then it should work. Because it's all about, the point is it's all about the attitude. Because what does control the eyes and the ears and the hands and the legs? Yes, so that's why now he's bringing it to that. Because when you say the heart here, then we mean the mind. Because steel framed, we don't have a problem if he has steel framed intelligence. Right? We have a problem if you have a steel framed mind. Because then that means it's not going to be.
It's impersonal.
Yeah, it's impersonal. But steel framed intelligence means he's always fixed, his intelligence is good, it doesn't get disturbed. Like that, no one will say that's, you know.
or a cast iron stomach, you know, that's also useful, you know.
Yes.
Steel frame heart, not so useful. It is expected by all means that by discharging regulated devotional service, one must manifest the change of heart. If there is no such change, the heart must be considered steel frame, for it is not melted even when there is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. We must always remember that hearing and chanting are the basic principles of discharging devotional duties. And if they are properly performed, there will follow the reactional ecstasy with signs of tears in the eyes and standing of the hairs on the body. These are natural consequences and are the preliminary symptoms of the bhava stage. Which occurs before one reaches the perfectional stage of prema. Right, so one's already experiencing them. The point of bhava means that they're continuous. Right? But before that, something is there. But then on prema, then, because these are only symptoms, so it's a matter of that attachment. If the reaction does not take place, even after continuous hearing and chanting the holy name of the Lord, it may be considered to be due to offenses only. That is the opinion of the Sandarbha. In the beginning of chanting of the holy name of the Lord, if the devotee has not been very careful about avoiding the 10 kinds of offenses at the feet of the holy name, certainly the reaction of feelings of separation will not be visible by tears in the eyes and standing of the hair on end. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse. That heart which does not transform by the many names of the Lord being chanted, Grihyamanai, is iron, Ashma Sharam. The transformation is described. The body hair should stand up. The Sandarbha says that if one continuously chants but the heart does not melt, that is a sign of Namaparad. However, it should not be said that simply by tears and hair standing on end that a person has a melted heart. Rupa Goswami has said, when a person has a hard heart and practices exhibiting the sattvika bhavas without even a touch of emotion, the appearance of tears or other symptoms are called nishatva. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2389. Right, so therefore it's not about that. It's about actually trying to chant the holy name free from the 10 offenses. Because that will get the results.
Yes. This is sahaj.
Yeah, I mean, sahajya would be one who practices the sattvika bhavas without actually having any ecstasy. So it's a drama.
Yeah.
You know, and so how well you can do the drama is how advanced you are in that mind. Yes, chilies, they help. Right there. And in the devotees with very deep experience of prema, external tears and hairs standing on end may not be seen, even though they have melted hearts. Therefore, this verse should be explained as follows. That heart which does not transform with chanting, but still has tears in the eyes and hairs standing on end, imitation, should be considered an iron heart. Right? Because the point is, it's not necessarily that the symptoms will manifest. It just depends upon how one is able to control the emotions. Right? Either like the mountain in the ocean, and so you don't see any movement. You know, or the pebble in the pond, there's a little movement. Right? Or then there's the, what do you call it? The cotton. You know, it's been fluffed and everything. Just the slightest breeze, immediately it's gone. Like that. So that's just the individual. So you may see, you may not see. Like, there's only example of Rupa Goswami showing ecstatic symptoms once. Right? So that's the example of the mountain and the ocean. Right? So you don't see it. So the point is if the heart hasn't melted and you're seeing ecstatic symptoms, that's the stone-hearted. Make sense?
Yes.
No?
It might be occasional. I mean, I'm not talking about imitation.
Yeah, but here they are. In other words, if you see symptoms but the heart hasn't melted, that's imitation. How do you know about your stomach?
Oh, you mean about yourself? About
yeah, well, you okay. We'll start there. Work it out yourself, it'll be easy to see in others. You know, it's an easy process. Start with yourself, expand from there.
That's boring. Huh? It's much more fun to start with everybody else.
No, it's not, I wouldn't say boring. I would say less scary.
Isn't it scary to start with yourself?
That's what I'm saying. It's less scary to start with everybody else. Yeah. Starting with yourself is more scary. Yeah,
What does it actually mean, the melting of the heart?
Melting of the heart.
Yeah.
But it means that you have affection for Krishna. Mm-hmm. You like this process. Yes. The point is you know how you feel. How it means, do you like chanting? Is it nice? Is it, you're attracted to it? Can you see it in yourself? If you can see there, then the same points are there in others. If you can't see it in yourself, it'd be hard to see it in others. But it doesn't mean others will necessarily externally react the same, but the principle is there. Okay. Yes?
For me, it's very interesting how these three verses connect to each other, because we see a progression. There is one verse, the first few verses are external, and then the last verse goes more internal. And speaks about, so maybe you can just, because often this verse that we just covered is seen in a separate way, because it speaks about the chanting, but actually there is a progression.
It's a progression. You're talking about the person in general. Then you're talking about individual details of the person. Then you're bringing it back to the whole person again, but even taking it a step further, that they're as good as dead. But then, what is the cause of having no interest in engaging the hands or the ears or the eyes or the tongue in the Lord's service? That's the mind. That's the progression. Right, so you're showing the general principle, you're showing details of the general principle, then you're taking it further to show that deeper element of being, everything is useless, right? And then you're showing that that's because of the nature of the mind. So the mind is what has to be engaged in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? The extraordinary symptoms of transformation of the heart should be the list of items starting with shanti. The anubhavas, or characteristics of a person who has developed the bud of bhava, are as follows. Tolerance, not wasting time. Detachment from enjoyment. Pridelessness, confidence in the Lord's mercy. Longing for the Lord. Taste for chanting the name of the Lord. Attachment to discussing about the Lord's qualities, and attachment to living in the abode of the Lord. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Through 26. So these are the symptoms or anubhavas, right? Which are, in other words, if there's a mood, right? Because you have the bhava is there, but when the main manifestation is there, for whatever reason is the reason for it coming up, these are the side things that you will see. Mm-hmm. Right? Then there may be, yes, yeah. Yes.
Is there a progression in these symptoms?
It says a list starting with shanti, but that shanti, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a progression. It just means that shanti is the first one being mentioned. So then you know what list is being talked about. So it's not necessarily it says that. Otherwise, then, because generally when it is specifically a order, then it's mentioned, like Shraddha and Sadhusanga, then it's mentioned Tata, you know, it means then you'll get this, then you'll get that, like that. These are just the ones, because different ones may come up. Someone is, you know, naturally tolerant, one is able to apply that in Krishna's service, so you get that benefit from there. Someone else is, doesn't waste time, you know, so like this, they'll come. So different persons will have the different elements. So all these aspects are there. Because tolerance is nothing bothers you because it's just, it's all in connection with the Lord. So it doesn't matter which, whether it's favorable or not favorable according to our material definition. Right? So that we can handle all these things. Not wasting time, everything's always connected to the Lord. Detachment from enjoyment means it's not about enjoying. Things come along, it's nice, that's that, but you're not attached to that situation. Because interacting with Krishna is always going to be nice. But you're not attached to that particular form of that interaction. Does that make sense? Yes.
Those are byproducts of...
That's why it's anubhava.
Yes, and it means we don't endeavor for them. And this is not our goal, it just comes along.
Yes, that's why I'm saying these are extraordinary. These are symptoms. These are the symptoms of. So if that mood is there, then that symptom is there. So that's why we don't separately try to... We're just aware that, okay, now, if what does that mean? If I'm wasting time, what does that mean? I'm not connecting that aspect to Krishna. So the focus is not on that I'm not wasting time, it's on that I'm being Krishna conscious. If I'm being Krishna conscious, you're not wasting time. It's automatically taken care of. If you're Krishna conscious, you're tolerant. You're Krishna conscious, you're confident in the Lord's mercy. Right? Does that make sense? But if it's not, you can use that as a starting point. It's like, it's the same principle as the universal form. Because what are these qualities? These are qualities of the universal form, but they're impersonal. Tolerance on its own is simply a quality of the universal form. Right? So we start with that, and then from that remember back to the person, and then engage in that service, so it works. That's what this whole section is pointing out. Right? So it's not the, you know, sitting down and meditating and then universal form taking. That is how you start. That particular method is how impersonalists and yogis start the process. Right? Because they don't know how to do anything else but that kind of meditation. And they don't accept the personal form of the Lord. This is how they can start to make that connection. But for the devotee, it's just all these things that we call important, like we did before, oh, I'm not pure, he's not purified, or, you know, he needs to purify himself, or he needs to change his nature, or, you know, all these different things, you know, he's unqualified, you know, all these different, what's that mean? These are all, we've just been discussing impersonalism here. Because what's the connection? Right. So, then the point is these all have value if they're connected to the Lord. So then how to connect them to the Lord? It's not that you don't have that connection, so therefore you're useless. Right? The solution is not, he's not tolerant, so he shouldn't be allowed to do service. No, he's not tolerant, he should be doing service. That will develop it. So if there's any shortcoming seen, it's only by service. And then that service means according to nature. So one has to be engaged in that way. So you have to find a situation that does that. Because it's the service that's important. Not the purity and everything else like that. Those are simply symptoms. Does that make sense? You know, it's like the difference between modern medicine and Ayurvedic medicine. Modern is you have a rash, you just get a cream put on the rash and it's supposed to go away. Ayurveda, they might not even give you a cream to put on the rash. They'll give you medicine that'll purify the blood and the digestion so that it goes away. Sometimes not even the blood, they'll just purify the digestion. You know, you make that work, then the blood stops being impure, and then naturally then the rashes go away. So there's a great difference. You know, the one who complained, you're doing nothing about the rash, so you're not doing anything. No, the real thing is go to the root. The root is not being God conscious.
So there is no point to complain that we didn't have those even after many years, because as soon as we have Krishna conscious, we do have them.
Yes.
And then we just follow that.
Yes. They'll just come, yes. Because the anubhava just means it comes on its own. So the Anubhavas, Satvika Bhavas, these just happen, Satvika and Sanchari, these just happen. Right? You don't cultivate. You cultivate loving relation with Krishna in the Stai Bhav, and then that's done by the Bhav, what things create for you that interest in Krishna, where those points are that you remember Krishna, become absorbed in Krishna. That. Those are ones you can deal with. These other ones just happen on their own. That's why we don't make a separate endeavor, because like you said, if you have the one, the other comes anyway. Right? You get in the bathtub, you automatically get wet. You don't have to make a separate endeavor. Tears and hair standing on end are the ordinary symptoms of the heart melting. When the Uttamadikaris, who are near Matsara, chant, they experience the sweetness of the name. In that state, there will be symptoms such as tolerance and tears. When the majority of Kshanti Adhikaris with Matsara...
Kanista
Adhikaris. Oh, because I was thinking putting it back to the...
Yeah.
That he was talking about this list.
Yeah.
That's amazing. When the majority of Kanista Adhikaris with the Matsara chant, they will not experience the sweetness of the name. Matsara is envy. Yeah. They will not experience the sweetness of the name, and transformation of the heart will not take place. The symptoms starting with tolerance do not appear, even though they may show tears or hair standing on end. They should be criticized as having iron hearts. However, by association with devotees, when they pass through the stages of Anartha Nivritti, Nishta, Rushi, and Ashakti with time, the heart will melt, and the iron heart will dissolve. Those whose... Those whose heart melt but remain iron-like are hard to cure. This is explained in relation to Sabija Yoga Dhyana in the third canto. Somehow I kept getting, the iron heart, and then the question before the iron curtain. Yeah. So, even though it's melted, but they still manifest the symptom right there. The unfortunate, the hardcore communists, in the government trying to, they're the hardest ones to work with. The unfortunate yogi who has developed love for the Lord, full of all sweet qualities, whose heart is somewhat soft because of devotion, whose body hairs stand on end in ecstasy, who is constantly overcome with intense tears of joy, gradually withdraws his hook-like mind from the Lord's form. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:28-34. The unfortunate yogi, because they only use the Lord's form to come to that position, but they don't realize that these are transcendental symptoms. So they're unfortunate. But ones who don't, then they take it that if I'm getting this happiness that's never been gained before, it's that this is what should be pursued. Not that, okay, now this is just an interlude between now coming to the platform of Brahman, which will be the real happiness. Right? So that's the unfortunate.
Right. Those whose heart melt but remain iron-like.
Means that you can. The point is the holy name has this effect. So, right? In other words, it's not us; it's the Lord. It's just like, let us say, the snow is there in the morning. And one's gotten up and one notices that the, Sunday morning paper is sitting out there, but not on the porch, somehow or another, it's out in the snow. So in your pajamas, you run out there and pick it up. Okay? Now, the coldness that you feel, is that coming from yourself? You feel cold, but where did it come from? Yes, so therefore, the symptoms of ecstasy, where did they come from? Do we generate them?
No.
They come from the Lord. So this idea is that, oh, he can't feel that, or he can't, that can't be. That's because we're saying that they generate it. No, the Lord, you come in contact with the holy name, one can get these symptoms. It's even mentioned, Haridas Thakur mentions, you know, referring to Rupagus. Rupa? No. Or Rupas? No. Yeah, I think it's... The point being made is that the impersonalist might even, by chanting the holy name, feel that ecstasy. But they feel that they're generating that. You know, that's because of Brahman. They don't understand this, that it's the Lord's name. So the Lord's name can manifest these symptoms and so on. So one can still have these symptoms, but not be committed to that surrender to the Lord. But the idea is that having come in contact with them, one should therefore be attracted that this process can give that. So, and this is in our state, so let alone when we're actually have that affection for the Lord. Does that make sense? Does that work? Okay, no, but I'm saying the logic of it, you know.
Dridhaya means his heart has melted. However, Badisha, fish hook, means it is still iron, since the fish hook is made of iron. Bhava, that he attains, and the melting of the heart are abhashas, or semblances only, since he gradually withdraws the mind from the Lord. Why give up the Lord, who is the real goal of life? By the bhakti in his meditation, he cannot be called a devotee, but a yogi, since he gives pain to the limbs of the Lord, the object of his meditation, by his fishhook heart, which is hard and bent. The ideas present here are supported later in the text. Actual speech is that which describes the qualities of the Lord. Real hands are those that work for him. A true mind is that which always remembers him, dwelling within everything, moving and non-moving. And actual ears are those that listen to sanctifying topics about him. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.83. These statements by negative expression confirm the necessity of practicing bhakti, which is the conclusion of the scriptures. And so they've used this poetic by using it the other direction. Right? So in other words, if you had written this verse and handed it in, you know, in junior high or high school, the teacher would have rejected it because they would have said to use, you know, the, you know, active case.
Yes. So it seems from this description that the yogi's practice is correct, but his
attitude is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise, why is he? He's meditating on the Lord. Yeah. If you meditate on the Lord exclusively, you're going to get results.
And he's getting the results.
He's getting the results, but his purpose in getting those results is not the pleasure of the Lord. That's where it falls apart. Yeah.
So the problem is in Prayojana, not in Abhideya.
Yes. Yes. But it's also, you could say, Prayojana and in Sambandha. Right? It's Abhideya is correct. Yes.
Yes. Maharaj, when you were speaking about Sai Baba, you were mentioning the words cultivation and endeavor. Were you referring to the process of hearing and remembering?
We were just referring to the generic process of devotional activities. After glorifying the process of devotional service and condemning those who do not engage in devotional service, Shaunaka Rishi requests Sutta Goswami to relate what was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami in response to the questions of Maharaj Parikit, 25. Srila Sridhar Swami summarizes chapters 1 to 3 as follows. The first chapter describes meditation on the Lord's universal form by engaging in devotional activities, beginning with hearing and chanting about the Lord. The second chapter describes discarding meditation on the universal form and adopting instead meditation on Lord Vishnu, the witness of everything and master of all. The third chapter describes the supreme position of service to Lord Vishnu performed with great devotion, and which consists of many activities, beginning with hearing about the Lord. So that's... So here we see is that we're starting with that meditation. Better than meditation on the universal form, the impersonal aspects of Krishna, is on the personal. But better than just meditation on the personal is doing something in relation to the personal.
Yes.
Right. So the devotee is focused on this third part, but it's not that the first two aren't used.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? They're not used. They're used to affect the service to the Lord. To see that one's engaged in service, then one may apply these other two. Right. Yes. Okay, chapter 4, the process of creation. Pratigya. One should understand the greatness of the Lord before approaching his intimate pastimes. Because if we don't understand the greatness, we will take it as ordinary. Right? The pratigya of this chapter is expressed in this excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 6. Those who are in control of the external energy of the Lord, or, in other words, those who are in the material world, must first of all know how the external energy of the Lord is working under the direction of the Supreme Personality. And afterwards, one may try to enter into the activities of his internal energy. Otherwise, there's this idea to just jump into the pastimes. But the point is if we're under the control of the external energy, we need to know how this external energy is coming from Krishna. Right? Otherwise, then what happens is we will deal with the pastimes in basically a fairly ordinary way. So we won't get the benefit that we will get if we appreciate the actual position of Krishna and his devotees. Right? What that means, that relation, then we will really appreciate what's going on. That's why I said, because you can read the stories. It's not that you won't read them and there's something. But the amount of appreciation you can get, that's what the... first nine cantos of training one in. Right? So this being the beginning of the conversation, therefore they're starting this point out, is that you must appreciate this. Therefore, then you're dealing with how the material energy is controlled by the Lord. And seeing that, you can see how you're controlled by Maya. And you understand how to get out, because if you're controlled by Maya, Maya's controlled by Krishna, you put yourself under Krishna, you're not under the control of Maya. But it's point by point. Right? If in general you surrender, then the whole process is taken care of. But if you surrender on one part but not on another, that's the point where you take it back to the creation. That's why we said the universal form. Because right? Creation means the universal form. Right? Brahma's creation is the secondary. Right? That's just construction. Right? But the actual creation of the whole process, the power of it, how it works, the potencies, that's then Krishna's creation. Chapter 4 summarizes questions and answers. Questions 31 through 33 are asked by Maharaj Parikit of Sukadeva Goswami. These questions are the answer to question 30. Asked by Sutta of Shonaka, why did Maharaj Parikit again inquire from Sukadeva Goswami after hearing all that he had said? Or what did? But question 30 is about the further questions of King Parikit, who makes queries nearly up to the very end of Srimad Bhagavatam. Thus, the full answer to question 30 really spans all that the king asked of Sukadeva Goswami in his final week on earth. Question 31. So these are, you know, what did he ask next? Meaning, you know, they want to see exactly, but the point is he keeps asking. Because right? In this case, a week is not a long time. You know, we're not talking about, you know, oh, that's so, you know, that's so third day. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, it's not, yeah. Question 3. I beg to know from you how the personality of Godhead, by his personal energies, creates these phenomenal universes as they are, which are inconceivable even to the demigods. Right? The universes are inconceivable to the demigods. Right. So let alone us. Right? And so, you know, we'll sit here in our wheelchair and we got it all worked out, right? You know. So here is by his personal energies. Because that's the thing. There's involvement here. The Lord's personal energies take care of this. Then we get the reflection. Question 32. Kindly describe how the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful, engages his different energies in different expansions in maintaining and again winding up the phenomenal world in the sporting spirit of a player. Question 33. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is one. Whether he acts alone, or whether he alone acts with the modes of material nature, or simultaneously expands in many forms, or expands consecutively to direct the modes of nature. Footnote 10. Verse 9 is not phrased as a question in Srila Prabhupada's translation, but in verse 10, Maharaj Pariksit refers to this and the earlier two verses as vichikitsitam etan me, these doubtful inquirers of mind. In the translation to verse 9, the word whether is used, which is implied by the Sanskrit in but and va, either. The Sanskrit eka, buddhisha, and janmabhi refer to the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, his simultaneous expansions and his appearance one after another in the material world. By putting emphasis on whether, the translation should be rephrased this way. The Lord is one, but whether he acts alone with the modes of nature, or he expands in many forms for the same purpose, or he appears in the material world in consecutive incarnations to direct the modes of nature. So then you can understand how it's a question. Okay. So here he's talking about just the relationship between the Lord and his energies and how that mechanically works. Then about how his pastimes and that, how the universe is being maintained and destroyed. Right? Then him as a person, then how he is being, well, you know, what is his position in relationship to all this. Mm. Yes?
Why would not we ask those questions before at the time of almost his death?
Because you want to get out of the material world.
Wouldn't you be more concentrating on the personal aspect? Not like how you maintain.
It means, yes, you want to become more concentrated on the personal aspect, but is one. Mm-hmm. That's the point. Mm-hmm. Because if he doesn't start here, we won't start here.
So it's for us.
It's for us, but the point is for these acharyas, they're only seeing the person and what he's doing. So it's all about the person anyway. Right? Because him and his energy, that's what he says. I beg to know from how the personality of Godhead, by his personal energies, creates this phenomenon. So how does he do that with his personal energies? We'll be just looking at the transformation of energy, not the connection with the Lord. Because otherwise, if we see the connection of the Lord, then it's also a nice conversation. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like this. Let us say we're explaining, this is being explained to the residents of Vrindavan, right? About the Lord and his creation. How with his energies he's creating things. Okay. So, are they going to have a problem with it? Okay. What will they be thinking of? Krishna. Okay. Mother Yashoda will be thinking of?
Her son.
The gopis will be thinking of the lover. The cowherd boy is her friend. You understand? So it's Udipan. So we take it that unless we're directly talking about, we're not dealing with the Lord, but it's who you're remembering. But we may be talking about the Lord and wondering if we turned the gas off before we left the house. You know? That's the whole point is, you know, where's my bead bag, you know these things, and we're worried about the bead bag because our keys and our money are in. Yeah, not the beads, not that I can't chant. Yeah, so that's the difference. That's why these things are useful, but they're not the symptoms. That's why I said the symptoms are, you know, tolerance, you know, these other elements. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Why Prabhupada sometimes say that?
Why does who?
Prabhupada.
Okay.
He say that the universal form is imaginary.
It's imaginary as directly the form of the Lord, but the Lord's expanded his potencies into these things. There's a transformation of his energy. Right? It's Shakti Parinamavad, not Brahma Parinamavad. So the Mayavadis, or the impersonalists and the yogis, they're basically dealing with it on the term of, Brahma Parinamavad, that there's transformation of Brahman. But the actual transformation is his energy. He doesn't transform. So, in actuality, they bring it to the personal, then they see it as all connected to him. So you naturally make that connection. So for the devotee's use of it, it's imaginary in that you're, by aropia, you're placing upon it your values. But it's not that it's not Krishna. It's just you're only seeing that aspect. Why you're not seeing the other aspect? Right? And the element is you're only seeing the Brahman aspect. What about the person? But now his questions are, how is the person through his energies connected to this which I see? Right? Because otherwise, we explained before as the universal form is how he's expanded into everything. So you're dealing with very, very subtle points of a subtle point. Does that make sense? So it's imaginary because you're using the mind to connect these things, but that's not the Lord. The Lord is beyond that. But because you're using that as the method, he reveals himself through that process. Right. Does that make sense? So at the same time, it is him, but as a person, he's beyond. So as him as a person, it's imaginary that he's the universe. But it's his potency, and as Brahman and Paramatma, he is expanding and the whole universe is created. So that's the thing, is these two contradictory elements don't have a problem when it comes to him. Does that work?
Yeah.
A little bit connected, but if we can use anything to connect to Krishna or to remember Krishna, as long as we recognize it as being connected to Krishna, then what's the value of one activity over another? Why do we emphasize on the direct things that connect us directly to Krishna, the person, as opposed to any other activity?
Well, the direct are automatically the ones that are recommended. Then within indirect, there's standard things to connect or ways to connect. But technically you can connect anything. But that's still the indirect. It doesn't have the weight that the direct has. Because direct means hearing and chanting about the Lord. Mm-hmm. But indirect is figuring out how your toilet paper is connected to the Lord. You know, and why the particular brand that you bought, you know. Why not, you know, Soviet toilet paper. That will definitely make you remember the Lord.
Soviet doesn't exist. Soviet toilet paper doesn't exist. It's a newspaper.
And even more. More weight. He's like, you want it in, it means coming from England, you're more comfortable in kilos or pounds? Either, okay. Okay, so if you're directly dealing with the Lord, then you're getting the benefit whether you are appreciating it or not. The indirect, if you don't connect it to the Lord, you're not getting any benefit. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, there's a kirtan going on, and you're thinking about something else, and you walk by the kirtan. You've heard it, but you're not paying attention. Did you get benefit? Yes, not as much as if you had absorbed yourself or appreciated it. But you will get benefit, because that's direct. Now, you walk through your house, and you don't see anything in connection to Krishna. Did you get any benefit? No. That's the difference between direct and indirect. Okay, so we'll end here. Continue in the evening. But today's Thursday, right? So we have an evening class. Yeah. From tomorrow, then we won't have.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki,
Jai
Jainita Gaur Premanand.